This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
What's good, everybody? Welcome back. This is the Coast to Coast podcast here on InsideCarolina.com. I am Joey Powell. As always, the show is brought to you by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Welcome in. It's good to see you. This is the first of getting back to our regular weekly episodes of the Coast to Coast podcast here on Inside Carolina. I'm Joey Powell. With me, as always, Sherelle McMillan, Sean Moran. Sean, how is the left coast, sir?
Last time it was sunny and happy, and now it's a rainy, dreary type of day and mood, I think, across the fan base.
Mother Nature just singing us right into it, huh? Sherelle, how are you, dude?
Yeah, it's clear outside, but my heart is crying and sad. So I think that's where we're at. That's where everybody is.
I wish it would rain so that people can't see the tears in my eyes. Hey, man, it was good to see you last night, Sherelle. And shout out to everybody who's listening who came by the Inside Carolina Live tailgate yesterday at Primari Brewery for the football game. We won't talk about the game itself, but, man, that tailgate was live. It was good to see so many people that came and introduced themselves. I know some folks were surprised and happy to have met Sherelle in person. Came by and told me they were happy they met Sherelle, which I guess I'm Sherelle's PR agent now, so that's good to hear. But thanks to everybody who's listening who came by to see that. Listen, if you are not subscribed to this show, please take a second and give me a just really, really good knee drop right on that subscribe button. We would appreciate it. Make sure you get all these podcasts sent to you, whatever device or however you consume the show. Get them sent to you automatically. So I appreciate all y'all being here, man. This is, you know, we're fully into the season now, and I know the season's not going the way we want, and we're getting ready to talk about it as best we can. So today, as we're recording this on Sunday evening, Tar Heels losers 80-72 in Blacksburg, Castle Coliseum. Guys, I want to start just briefly and talk about this game in and of itself, kind of from a post-game reactions for a few minutes, and then we'll get into the season as a whole as to where we sit. The biggest thing that I want to take away from this game is probably a continuation of what we've seen, and that's 6 assists on 24 field goals. Sean, you had a chance to watch the ball game. Is it as simple as missing jump shots and not sharing the ball is what caused another loss today in Castle?
That's obviously a huge issue in terms of the assist number, ball movement, things of that nature. But I mean, it's really on both sides of the ball. I think there's zero identity offensively and defensively, and the teams that they've been playing have been able to dictate on both sides of the ball what they want to do. It wasn't until Carolina was down 18 where they really went into scramble mode and they started to dictate with the full court pressure, as well as offensively looking to attack much earlier than they were. So, I mean, I think that's just one issue. But, you know, over the 4 games, what was it, 2 years ago, we always talked about, can the team get to 8 3-pointers a game the year they lost to Wisconsin. And after last year, that almost being a joke, this year, it's right back to that, except they're not even getting close to that. And then defensively, there's a lot of breakdowns with any, you know, any pick and rolls, and just it doesn't look like a cohesive unit at all out there. So I think there's a ton of issues right now. The assist has been the one that has stood out all season, but there's a lot of issues going on right now.
Sherrill, Sean makes a couple of really good points, specifically about defensive lapses. I saw Justin Mutz getting whatever he wanted in the second half today, and he's a good player. He's an all-conference player. He's, you know, he's been really reliable for Virginia Tech for the last few years. And obviously the absence of Armando Bacot today allowed him to operate a little more freely than he usually would. Sherrill, what can North Carolina have done today to be better on defense? Or is it just the lapses were too continuous to kind of dig out of? You know, when we did see them play the last 6 minutes really well, when they started kind of junking things up on defense and playing motivated, sharing the ball, all that stuff, is there something they could have done defensively to keep themselves from getting to that point where they're down 18 in the second half?
Yeah, I don't really have an answer, to be honest. You know, there's probably something. I think if Hubert Davis knew what it was, he would implement it immediately. I think what I have seen a little bit lately is very similar to, again, parallels to last year. At the beginning of the year, I think you saw folks saw Brady Manick on the defensive end as an opportunity to exploit that matchup. And the first few games with Pete Nance, I didn't think that was going to be an issue because he played really well. But as the level of competition has ramped up, I think you're starting to see them opposing teams attack him defensively, because right now he's not offering a ton of resistance at the rim. And with the Bacot out, you know, Nance is really the only other big guy, you know, right now on the team who's playing major minutes. And there was no fear of him whatsoever today in Portland or on Wednesday. And I think as he grows into his role, that's something he's going to really have to work on. And the team is going to have to work on is just playing with that physicality, matching it that they're getting each game, because it does feel like they come out. And it's so weird. There's several thoughts here, but it's so weird because they come out and it seems like, I don't know if lackadaisical is the right word, if it's confusion. I don't know what it is, but they come out and it's like just not, it's not crisp. It's not
uninspired.
Sharp.
Uninspired is where they come.
Yeah.
To
yeah. And you know, this has been outside of that run last year, kind of a systemic issue with this group. And I thought they were past it. It seemed like they were past it. The expectation was they were past it. They said they were past it. Hubert Davis said they were past it. And here we are, kind of the same issues popping up over and over again. So what could they have done different defensively? You know, today, I don't know, because as Sean said, there's no defensive identity. What's the goal on defense on each possession for UNC? And once we get that answer, then you can kind of, you know, make a trail of, okay, so this is how they get there. But I don't know that we know what the goal is defensively on each possession. And until that is clear, I think, to the players and clear from the staff, I think you'll see these kind of lapses continue.
Yeah, it was a bit unnerving to see, you know, again, they had two assists on their first two baskets of the game. And then I don't know if they had another one for the entire first half, which people that watch a lot of Carolina basketball, and, you know, I saw some Carolina basketball alums this weekend at the Inside Carolina tailgate. Guys aren't exactly used to seeing this out of a Tar Heel offense. And specifically going back to the defensive thing, you're right. I think you guys, you know, we saw some promise from Pete Nance defensively as an individual earlier this year, and that just, he struggled today against Virginia Tech. So today marks the fourth loss in a row for the Tar Heels after starting 5-0. They'll obviously fall out of the rankings the next time they come down, and I don't know that that's a bad thing at this point. It's nice to be considered, you know, to be the preseason number one, but when you're not even coming close to living up to that, there's no reason to have a number beside your name at all. Guys, I want to ask first things first. Sherrill, I'll throw this to you. What do you think is wrong with this team? And you can go in a number of different directions, so I'll shut up for a little bit. You just go wherever you want to go with this, because I think the issues are numerous.
Yeah, so 9 games, you know, Georgia Tech will be the 10th game. That's a third of a season. So it's not like we have a small sample size. It's not like it's just a couple of games, but it's kind of the same issues that were popping up last year. There's no identity right now, as we said, offensively or defensively. There's poor shooting. There's even despite the offense that's being run, this poor spacing. And then it is just, to me, inconceivable how the regression from the three-point line has occurred for the majority of the team outside of really, I guess, Leaky and Nance. I mean, it's shocking, honestly, considering how well down the stretch RJ Davis shot it. We know Caleb is kind of, when he gets hot, he can go off, but he can also go 1-for-10 very easily. So you kind of accept that. But it's really surprising, the shooting aspect of it. So I think that's one. The lack of identity is two. And then three, when I'm going to say this, and it seems like a dirty word. Everybody hears it and they start wondering. But I do think there are chemistry issues. And I don't mean chemistry as in, like, guys are yelling at each other and throwing chairs in the locker room like it's a WWE match. I don't mean that at all. What I mean is, they, despite how much they played together last year, the kind of core four who returned, the core four plus Nance don't know how to play with each other yet. That kind of chemistry, I guess, has to be built in season. You know, I made the comparison to last year because it's really all we have to go on. But even last year at the beginning, it looked just like this, very jagged, very disconnected. You know, at times you almost want to say aloof because you're not quite sure how to describe it. So there was a lot of that going on. And I think it's the same thing this year. They just don't know how to play together yet. And that's hard to accept considering how much they play together. It's a weird dynamic, but that's, when I look at it, that's kind of what I see.
Well, and it's definitely hard to build chemistry when you lose your preseason, you know, conference player of the year, preseason first team All-American, who didn't play today at Virginia Tech, as we mentioned earlier. Sean, does shooting better really change these first nine games and these last four? I think one of the things that we've talked about before they went to Portland for this West Coast swing was, you know, we would know a lot more about them. And I think we thought, you know, worst case scenario, they dropped two. Well, they've dropped four of them. Mm-hmm. And each, until today, until the last 6 minutes of the Virginia Tech game, you could argue that each loss looked worse than the one prior to that, which is frustrating, independent of opponent. Would better shooting from the guards, would that change the outcome of what we've seen so far?
It wouldn't hurt. I mean, you have two very high usage guards shooting 26% from three. You know, going into the Indiana game, did a post right before talking about the distance that they were shooting from, and that, you know, RJ was doing very well outside of his deep threes. I mean, even today, you saw the ones he was taking a little behind the three-point line that they're just coming up short. And Caleb, same thing. He wouldn't, you know, I think he was only around 32% from more of a normal distance. But over really 2.5 seasons, you have a huge sample size. And over that time, Caleb's 32% and RJ's 34%. So it's almost like last year was the anomaly for them both both shooting well. I think it's also harder for them to get good shots. You know, I think as we're seeing, they spent a lot of time out on the perimeter, two guys, you know, running the horn sets, doing, really having 2-3 max people involved in the play. And then all of a sudden, they're taking tough shots. They're rarely getting the open catch and shoot jump shots. So I think that is certainly part of it, but this almost goes back to the over-under stuff that we did preseason. And I'm sure we'd both like to take a lot of any overs that we took back, but, you know, part of it was Brady Manick, who was a four-man that could catch and shoot, and he was good for, you know, 2-4 threes a game. And that just makes offense click a lot better. Nance has been, you know, coming in from last year, was a good shooter. He's been able to knock some down, but as we talked about, his release is just so slow that he needs to be wide open. And now you're really playing with, you know, three. Leahy's been better, but teams are still playing off of him. So you have all this pressure falling on two guys, which is why, even though Nickel didn't hit any, and he was pretty far off on some of the ones he did take, like he at least, you know, offers that opportunity. But shooting would definitely help, but once again, it comes to trying to create good shots. And you know, you go back to the Alabama game, and anytime defensively they would run the pick and roll, and you knew that at some point in the shot clock, Carolina is going to be sprinting to run out at an open shooter. And it happened time and time again. And you never really see that when Carolina's on offense because the ball's only moving a few times. So rarely are teams out of sorts and running to try to cover or try to cover somebody that's wide open. So I'd say that's just one of it would help, but you know, they need to do a lot more to get those shooters better looks.
And Joe, adding on, like, where's the cutting? So we're talking about shooting and we're talking about whether or not, you know, some of these tough step backs and fadeaways and, you know, shooting over a guy coming off of a screen, if those shots go in, where are the guys cutting it? It feels like there's just three people watching. There's one person setting the pick, and then there's two other people ready to shoot, and then the other two guys are just kind of hanging out, you know? And I'm not saying they're doing that purposefully. I'm not saying that, you know, they're not good basketball players, but the more you move, the more, you know, especially in a half court offense, the more you move, the more chance that you're going to get open or you can help someone else get open. But right now it's kind of ball watching. It's kind of, okay, RJ and Caleb, we're going to pass the ball around to the entire team for about 25 seconds. And then when we realize there's 8 seconds left on the shot clock, we're going to give the ball to Caleb. And then to be fair, you know, RJ and Caleb take some tough shots because they have to, because they get the ball with 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Yeah. Well, I mean, what are they supposed to do? So I think it's not just those two. They do bear, you know, a lot of the blame, but it's not just them. This is a systemic thing. The whole team is contributing to these offensive deficiencies.
And I think there's usually a few possessions. For instance, the Virginia Tech game, the ball moved from left to right, got all the way to Trimble in the right corner, and he hit Nance cutting for a layup. And you say, wow, that was nice. But yeah, you're really only saying that two or three times a game max. And then, you know, for Pete Nance, we talked about what a great passer he was. And a lot of his passing last year came out of the post. So I know there have been a lot of complaints that once he gets it, you know, 15 feet from the basket and he starts backing the defender down, it obviously stops the ball movement, but nobody's cutting when he, you know, I don't think he's going into every back down looking to shoot the ball, because he can hit somebody if they're cutting. But once again, there's no ball movement, so he's being forced into, you know, taking a contested turnover your left shoulder, and whether it's a little hook shot or a fadeaway, you know, that's not helping either. So I think that just goes to what Sherelle was talking about the lack of movement from the team in general.
I think one of the things fans are the most kind of befuddled with are one of the things Sherelle mentioned a second ago, and Sean, you've alluded to a little bit. It's just the beating the ball into the wood on the perimeter over and over again for 20 seconds, 25 seconds. And then you try whatever single action you have, and a guy ends up taking a contested shot because they never, for whatever reason, it never gets below the free throw line a couple of times. And that's not just happening once or twice a half. It happened multiple times the first half against Virginia Tech. It happened a lot against Indiana. I think a lot of that was due to Indiana's defense pushing them out. But it's just it's frustrating to see for fans and Inside Carolina subscribers, just to see this offense not look like a North Carolina offense for all of the reasons you guys just mentioned. Sherelle, I want to ask you here. This is, and I'm kind of tripping on myself here, but I don't want to ask too big of a question, but by the same token, how long-term of a problem is this? I mean, you mentioned we're a third of the way through the season. We would like to think that these guys can flip the switch, and I want to give you credit because you said early in the year it's going to be hard for these guys to maintain the same intensity against, you know, Stony Brook Technical Institute of New Jersey as they had against Kansas in the Final Four, or Duke in the Final Four, or Baylor in the Sweet 16. You kind of alluded to that. It seems like it's more than that, though. You mentioned chemistry. How long-term of an issue is this?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, man. I think it is until it isn't. To give Jones Angel, I was listening to him talk on his podcast, and one of the things he said was what makes the last week so rough is that they had stretches against Alabama where they played really well, and they played up to the level of their competition. The issue was when you lose that game, when you lose Iowa State, you can't afford to lose the Alabama game.
Yeah.
And I agree 100%. Now, the effort against Alabama would have beaten Iowa State, you know, by 10, 15 points. So you can't afford to have those lulls because it catches up to you. We all knew that Indiana was going to be the toughest game on their schedule, not in the ACC. Yeah. So most people, I think, realistic fans were like, you know what? That's going to be tough for them to do in Assembly Hall, coming off of, you know, that stretch where they left Chapel Hill on the 21st and didn't come back until, I think, the 2nd or something like that.
Yeah.
So they were gone for a long time. So I said all that to say that they've had stretches where they've played well. They've had stretches where you see the sparks, you see how it can look. It's just a matter of putting it together. The issues, I think, aren't going anywhere. We don't know how healthy Armando Bacot is. Mm-hmm. DeMarco Dunn had just started to really play well and really earn his minutes in rotation. And now he's gone for at least a few weeks with a broken hand. So the issues are there. I don't think they're going anywhere. It's up to the coaching staff and the players to figure out, okay, how do we work around these? And how do we put our best foot forward? How do we put ourselves in the best position to succeed? And I don't think this team knows exactly, and it goes back to identity. I don't think this team knows exactly what the best position for success is for it. And until they figure that out, yeah, you're going to have these same issues. The great thing about Roy Williams' teams is that they always had an identity. You always knew exactly what they were going to do. It was just a matter of whether or not they did it well. The great thing about the run last year over, I guess, the final 20 games is that they had an identity. It was the Iron Five. It was Manic hitting shots. It was Caleb Love hitting tough shots. It was Armando doing the dirty work. It was Leaky, you know, locking down the best wing on the other team, sometimes the best four on the other team. And it was RJ Davis handling the ball and kind of running the show. So there were firm, locked in identities. Everyone knew their role. And I think this year they're just searching for that. And until that gets sorted out a little bit, yeah, it's going to continue to be up and down. I mean, would you be surprised if next week against Georgia Tech, you know, they maybe win the game, but it's, you know, a 5-point game or a 6-point game? That wouldn't be surprising at all based upon what we've seen, because all we can judge this team on is the 9 games it's played. And the 9 games it's played, frankly, does not look like an NCAA tournament team, to be honest. And that's another thing that we can get to in a little bit. But, you know, I thought the bubble talk was over. I didn't think I had to worry about Q1 wins this year and following that stuff. But you look at the ACC and you look at the opportunities for Q1 wins, and, you know, Ohio State and Michigan are going to be neutral courts. Michigan, technically a neutral court. So those are turning into very quickly must wins for UNC to help its NCAA tournament, you know, resume, which is an insane thing to say considering where we all thought the team was 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, I had somebody hit me on the Twitter machine after the loss against Alabama, which, again, that was just the 2nd loss, and they looked good at the time in instances and played tough against Alabama. Somebody told me I didn't know how the tournament works. No, I'm aware. I'm quite aware. I think we're all aware that, like you just said, where are the Q1s going to come from if this team doesn't go on a sustained run of wins? Sean, I had a really good question lined up for you, and then Sherelle just swept me off my feet with where I was going to go there. I think it's tough to break this team's struggles down without looking at kind of failure of execution. How much of that is focus? How much of that is mental, or how much of it is just the guys need reps with each other? Sherelle talked about earlier that, you know, the guys are still trying to figure each other out. We talked about spacing a little bit, but in your view, how much of this is just execution and guys not having enough reps doing what it is that the coaching staff wants them to do?
I think part of it is failure of execution, but I think part of it is, one part, you know, from a talent perspective, obviously we saw what they did last year with Brady Manick. But if you didn't know last year existed and you watched these games, Carolina, outside of Armando, I'd probably take Alabama, Indiana, Virginia Tech, you know, from a talent and athleticism standpoint over UNC. So I don't, part of it is execution, but part of it, you know, I think is how they're playing. As we said, everybody has regressed, both offensively and defensively. We've been talking mostly offensively, but defensively, you know, one of the crazy things is with Leahy Black, you have a guy that is going to pretty much take out one player on the opposing side. I know today Padula used the pick and roll and got some space with him, but Alabama, a lottery pick was taken out. Indiana, they had to switch it up, but there's been one common theme over the four games, and that's been the shooting guard hitting a shot early on and then just for the most part going unconscious. And that in Indiana, that led to you know, them having to change up the system and even today. And UNC hasn't been able to get off to good starts. And when they do, they give those up pretty quickly due to defensive lapses. So once again, I think part of it's execution, part of it is just how they're playing together, but also third is just from a talent perspective. From a name basis, everybody knows who these guys are. You know, they tested the waters, they did all this, but they're not playing at that level and they're not playing close to the level that they did last year. So I think it's a mixture of execution, current skill level, as well as just being mentally stronger.
Yeah. All these things you guys are saying, there's not much to add on top of it. I think it's a struggle for folks to process. Sherelle and I were saying in a Slack earlier today, like I understand how these things are happening. I understand what it looks like on the court, but I don't think anybody understands why they're happening. Go ahead, Sean.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, last year they got, you know, they had their losses to Tennessee and Purdue, and they came back home and had, you know, kind of a must-win game against Michigan, which they didn't look great in it, but it was at home and they just were able to, you know, do what they needed to do. And here they didn't have that reset. Mm-hmm. And they're finally, I think, trying to look at it glass half full, as they finally have that reset. You know, we don't know how healthy Armando has been the full year. Obviously he's had some strong statistical games, but it never looks like he's had that explosiveness off of both feet. So maybe this gives him a little bit of a chance to rest and recover. You have a team that they should beat in the ACC before going into those must win games. So I think just getting a reset, last year it came earlier, so they didn't have to lose four in a row, but that's probably the one silver lining to doing that. And even today, sorry, this is a little long-winded, but when you're watching the Virginia Tech game, you have this group of guys that has all this experience, but then all the freshmen, like, they've barely played together or mixed with RJ and Caleb, and it was just felt like a very inexperienced team. And I think the bench will need to play more, and they're going to have to step it up. You can't have Styles taking jump shots, so each one kind of needs to know their role for this team to get to even a tournament level team. So that was just one other thing of they're pretty experienced, but also very inexperienced at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to just jump in and say, if I don't know if there's going to be another PK 80 or when he turns 85, PK 85 or whatever, but they've got to figure out a way to just kind of schedule that a little differently. I guess it'll be the ACC SEC challenge then, but they've got to work together, because that schedule was pretty ridiculous of Thursday, Friday, Sunday games, fly from Portland to Bloomington on Monday, spend 2 days in Bloomington, play a late, you know, 9:38 tip on Wednesday, get home in the middle of exams, you know, get home early Thursday morning, exam time, and you have to be in Blacksburg in 2 days. Like, that's a bit much. And maybe that's partly ESPN, partly the ACC, partly Carolina, but the three entities need to work together, because that's too much over the course of, you know, 9 days for a team.
Well, on the flip side of that is Indiana had like a few days off and were at home before the game in Bloomington. Virginia Tech hadn't played in a week prior to today's match at home at their house. And also, can we talk about how absurd it is that the league is making these kids play the first conference game in finals? Like, during finals?
Do you remember when, that's about to sound real old, but do you remember when we were in school, there was a game.
There's nothing.
There's a Big Ten game on like December 1st or 2nd, and then they'd be off until like the 16th or something.
It'd be like 10 days or 14 straight days of nothing.
Right.
And that's a lot of times when, you know, either guys would get healthy or all of a sudden you start seeing the rotation really take shape.
Roy, he loved that because he would say, you know, once the exams ended, he was like, this is the time I can get them 100% focused on basketball. We'll have good practices. And UNC's teams almost always got better during that week and a half, 2 weeks or whatever it was. So it is a funky kind of thing now. But when you have 20 games in conference, I guess you have to start in early December.
And this is where you made the point about ESPN a second ago. This is where the the money is starting to talk a little bit and the money's starting to kind of drive things, because I understand they can't tell the Jordan brand and Nike, they can't tell them no, they don't want to play in this tournament. The tournament itself is good experience, but like you said, Sherelle, the way that it laid out in practice, pretty brutal. And we knew it was going to be bad, to repeat what you said earlier. We knew it was going to be bad. We didn't realize how bad it was going to be, and we thought the Tar Heels would play better. But guys, I want to see what positives have you seen over this 4-game losing stretch. And I'm not trying to Jedi mind trick anybody. I'm not trying to put sugar where there's no sugar necessary. I'm genuinely curious because I can think of a couple of things, but I want to hear you guys' opinion. That's what everybody's listening to the show for. They heard what y'all think. Sean, give me some positives that you've seen over this last stretch of 4 games that, even though there are losses on the scoreboard, could portend well for later in the season.
I was hoping you were going to go to Shrell first on this one, but I think positives, the bench is growing. You know, Puff played very well in Portland and Indiana, and he had offensive rating of 0 against Virginia Tech in 8 minutes and was non-existent in those 8 minutes. I think today you saw, you know, what we've been with Trimble. He offers just something that nobody else on the team can, from his ability to, you know, against Indiana, the hard part was they're playing so physical and so out on the perimeter and just saying, hey, beat me one-on-one. And Carolina could just not, they just couldn't do it. And Trimble is really the only guy from an athletic standpoint that can do it. He's just been playing limited minutes. So hopefully with what happened against Virginia Tech, they can get him in earlier and often to put ball pressure. And going back to the identity, they're going to have to start trapping or mixing up the defense, because they have to you know, be the one that is dictating the terms, not the whole game, but at least more than what they're doing. And even, you know, Nickel offered some bright spots.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you're going to a great point. How many times have we seen not just North Carolina, but teams in general be able to generate offense off of that defensive pressure? Even if they're not turning it into turnovers, direct points, it's changing the aggression. It's changing the mindset that they play on both ends of the floor.
Yeah. I mean, Virginia Tech missed some open threes during that time frame, but it also sped them up and got them out of sorts, where all of a sudden, you know, Mutz is passing to Padula going out of bounds, or UNC's getting in transition, which has been absolutely non-existent. So once again, it gives them a little bit, gets them going a little faster. Because right now they've been playing at a very, you know, you look at what you're used to seeing UNC playing at a fast speed, offense rebounding. Their tempo is extremely slow, but this gets them going. And once again, they're not doing anything defensively to disrupt the team, and they're not doing anything offensively to put pressure on the other team. And that seemed to get it going. Once again, I know that's not sustainable for 40 minutes, but you gotta do something. And then last positive thing, I mean, you have to go back to the Portland game with Caleb Love and how efficient he played in that game before really this four game stretch. But when you're talking about roles, I think that's the role. You can't be taking 25 plus shots a game, and they need him to be, you know, to be, they need him playing well to win games. So I think that those are a few of the positives. Hard to find a lot of positives in the last four, though.
I like what you said there too, talking about doing some of the running and jumping and some of the trapping the first pass type stuff. If Carolina can't defend the pick and roll, well, don't give the other team as many chances to set up a pick and roll in the half court. Cheryl, same thing. Give me some positives that you've seen. Again, we realize it's four losses. Nobody likes the four losses. Nobody inside the Smith Center likes four losses. Nobody watching the team likes four losses. What have you seen positive during this four-game losing stretch?
Well, we talked about his struggles a little bit on defense, but I think offensively I've been pleased with what Pete Nance has been able to do. And if you start looking at his profile, obviously at UNC, considering the personnel that he came into, he was going to be a much lower usage player than he was at Northwestern. But his numbers, his offensive rating is essentially the same. His shooting numbers are all up. So his effective field goal percentage is up. His true shooting percentage is up. His free throw percentage is up. His two-point percentage is up. His three-point percentage is down from what it finished at Northwestern last year. But I think he's been, you know, pretty good as far as, you know, like a second or a third scorer when need be. He's pretty crafty around the basket. He's got pretty long arms, longer than I thought. And he's got some moves down in the post that I didn't see. I really thought, you know, even though he played with his back to the basket some, I saw him as more of like a face-up five almost. But he's played with his back to the basket a lot. And he's very crafty from there. So I think that's been a pleasant surprise. There's been stretches where he's carried, you know, the team offensively, you know, multiple games. And right now, I think he's the top 3-point shooter on the team. He's made 12. he's shooting 35%. He's 12 of 34. I think that's number one on the team without double checking. So that's a positive.
Well, and also that little move that he does where he does a little drop step over his shoulder, bank shot. Like that's something his dad used to use regularly in the league. But he's got that down. He looks confident doing it. Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, very good with ankles. He's got a little hook that he can put over his left shoulder that goes in most of the time. He's good in the mid range, and right now he's UNC's best 3-point shooter. So offensively, I think that's worked out well. despite the last couple of games, I think Leaky has made strides offensively. He's not he's hesitated a couple of times the last couple of games, but the majority of the season, if he's open, you know, from that corner or from the wing, he's going to take the three. And I think it's to the point now where nobody gasps or nobody is, you know, cursing at the TV if he takes a shot, because he's proven that he can make it, and he's proven he can make it, you know, in big time moments. I go back to the Alabama game. It's completely forgotten, but UNC was down two, and I think it was Caleb who drove and dish it out to Leakey at the top of the key, not a second hesitation, just knocked down to three. Yeah. Yep. And put UNC up one. So he's wired for that. And I think, you know, I think it's okay for him now to go ahead and shoot that. I think Hubert Davis is happy with it. I think Leakey is comfortable with it now too. So those are two positives offensively that I think you can at least point to.
And those are things that if the team can figure out some of these other issues, having Leakey Black as an offensive threat, not that he's going to drop 20 on you a night, but just that teams can't sag off of him and put him on self-check like they did so many times earlier in his career, I think that's going to bode well for the squad. What's up, Sean?
Well, I mean, in terms of Leakey, it's kind of crazy to say, but he might have the highest NBA potential out of anybody on this team, which just he can absolutely shut down the top player. He had been playing better offensively, but then you look at Indiana, didn't score today, I think had 2 points on that dunk. And you would love to see him kind of attack from that wing spot a little bit more, like he did on the dunk today, like he did to start the second half against Indiana. I still don't know what happened when he went up in the air to start the half on that one. And even in Portland, you know, I think it was the Alabama game where he caught the ball at the top of the key. The defense was a little out of position, and he just attacked in one dribble, and he's at the basket. And this goes back to in the preseason, us kind of saying he has to be the most improved player, because that'll take a lot of heat off of the other guys. And the last few games, it hasn't been there. And I think it goes back to trying to identify roles. And if he's getting 4 to 5 shots, ideally one long pull up to max, but if he's attacking the basket and trying to be more aggressive on the boards, I think that can help the team out a lot, because really each position needs to improve, and that's one way for Leaky to improve, because he is, once again, the lockdown defender, which is rare and a nice to have.
And maybe I'm oversimplifying things here, which is I'm wont to do, but it's possible that just having Leaky as an offensive threat has made things tougher for these guys to get used to. You know, used to be it was they knew the offense was going to kind of have to come from one of the other four guys, and now you've got a guy in Leaky that's legitimately able to do some things. Again, I'm throwing things up against the wall here, which I think is is what a lot of coaching staff and a lot of other prognosticators are trying to do right now. But one of the things I think is probably guaranteed right now during the season is Johnny T-shirt. You don't have to worry about effort from Johnny T-shirt. You don't have to worry about consistency from Johnny T-shirt. You don't have to worry about Johnny T-shirt, you know, trying to figure out chemistry amongst their staff, because they've got it. Johnny T-shirt's already there. They're in NCAA tournament form as we sit here on December the 4th. Johnny T-shirt, big supporters of Inside Carolina. We are big fans of theirs. We hope that you will also be fans of theirs. Look, we're within 21 days of Christmas. You got to take care of your people. You need to let Santa Claus know what to put on your list, and Johnny T-shirt can help you with that. They've got a lot of stuff there that you can suggest as Christmas items. If you want to go ahead and grab something for yourself, feel free. You can use the premium code that's on the Inside Carolina subscriber premium message boards and get your extra 10% off top of their already amazing prices. Name brands, they got it. Different types of clothes, they got it. Different brands, they got it. You want it, they have it. Go see them. Visit them on East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill or johnnytshirt.com. We're so thankful for what they do for Inside Carolina. We hope that you will give them some of your business. Take a quick break. Let the national guys run some ads right in this segment. We'll be right back to wrap things up and try to figure out where do the Tar Heels go from here. Stick around on the Coast to Coast podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, thank y'all for sticking around. I'm Joey Powell, Sherelle McMillan, Sean Moran joining me here on Inside Carolina's Coast to Coast podcast. Thanks for being a part of the show. We've talked about a lot of the problems. We've tried to figure out what the hell is going on right now with the UNC basketball team. Now I'm going to get Sean and Sherelle to lay out the roadmap for us on how to solve all these problems. Sherelle, where does this team go from here? It's not as easy as just saying they play Georgia Tech next. I need you to give me more than that, brother.
On to Georgia Tech. I think you have to look to, you have to look to the past for the answer. And UNC was at its best last season, has been at its best the last couple of years when Armando Bacot is the centerpiece, the focal point of the team. The team needs to work from Armando Bacot out as opposed to the two guards in. And I think so far this season, there have been, I mean, there have been stretches where they being the rest of the team, have just completely forgotten about the 6'10 All-American. Obviously, as Sean said, he hasn't quite looked right the entire season. You think there might be, you know, another injury that's been nagging in addition to the one, you know, the ones that we know about. But I think that's the key, is he has to get a paint touch every possession. I mean, unless they're hedging with a guy over the top and, you know, the point guard, you know, below the 3-point line, unless there's like four guys bracketing him, you have to get him the ball because, you know, good things happen. That's how you get teams in foul trouble. You have Nance on the other side who, while not a great offensive rebounder, if two guys go to Bacot and Bacot puts up a shot, then Nance should be able to help clean that up. You know, we know Leakey is a very good rebounder. So that's there. And then I think just patience and just the resolve to continue to do what is needed as opposed to what might feel right at a certain time. So I guess that's more like discipline, the discipline to not take the shot that you really want to in order to get a great shot. I know that's a cliche and we hear it all the time, but it's true. Why take, you know, why settle for something good when something great might be a pass away or, you know, pass or two away. So I think offensively, that's how they move forward. Defensively, man, I don't know. I just thought this team, this unit would be much better defensively because of the length that it has. Mm-hmm. I'm not a smart enough basketball mind to tell you what needs to change defensively. It more so, I think, even in the offense, the lack of defensive prowess has been probably the most disappointing thing through 9 games because really expected a lot from them defensively and it just hasn't shown up.
Sean, I think Sherelle just laid out some really obvious ones. Is it as simple as communication? Can communication fix things, or is there something else you'd like to see them do to try to resolve some of these things sooner rather than later?
I think communication is part of it, but to piggyback on Sherelle and Armando Bacot, once again, depending on how the shoulder injury is, whether it's Georgia Tech or that Ohio State game, they have to look to get him the ball in a scoring position, not at the top of the key, but scoring position mm-hmm. early. And for him, you can probably count the number of times where he's just been able to catch the ball and do, you know, a four foot hook shot. A lot of his points have been, you know, off of offensive rebounds or other, and teams are sending doubles at him. So this is, goes back, you know, I remember after his freshman year, one of the biggest improvement points he made was being very decisive with his, mm-hmm. once he got the ball in his hands. And I think we need to see that coming back where he is a little more selfish. And even if he misses one or two, you know, the guards should not be out shooting him from three versus all his total shots. But at the same time, we know that double teams will be coming and they're going to be coming from all over. So he also has to be quicker with his decision-making and where that's going to go, because that can, once again, allow UNC to put pressure versus so many times they double, the ball goes back out, but nothing really changed versus you see UNC doubling the last two games and they're doubling from the same side. And you just know after two passes back and forth, the guy's going to be wide open.
Can I jump in on that, Sean? I'm not looking at me Louieing or anything like that, but I got a text from someone who knows basketball, someone who's, credentials are, I would say, pretty much unmatched in that particular person's basketball area. And they were like, helping off of the strong side shooter is one of the most antiquated, you know, terrible things you can do in basketball.
Yeah.
And I said, why do you say that? And they went into the explanation. They were like, that's not how it's done anymore. And they were shocked. And I said, well, you know, that's probably not what they were supposed to do, or, you know, whatever. That was just a one-off. And then it happened again. And the person was like, see? And I was like, yeah, okay. Well, there, maybe there's an issue there with whether it's being taught or whether it's muscle memory. That's just something that can't happen. I wanted to jump in on that because that was like a flashing red light when I got that text. So,
yeah, there are some things that do make you scratch your head. And to use an old Roy Williams euphemism, everything looks better when the ball goes in the basket. So who knows? Maybe if these guys start shooting a couple of ticks ahead or a couple of points better, you know, some of these outcomes are different. But they are who their record says they are right now. And right now, they're 5-4 on a 4-game losing streak, coming back home to play Georgia Tech on December the 10th, and will likely be unranked after starting the season's preseason number one. Boys, nowhere to go but up, right? I think Tar Heel fans are probably all hoping and praying that I'm right by saying that there is not a rock bottom below this. But if nothing else, there will be things that we can watch, all of the stuff that you guys just laid out, that we can watch for over the next few weeks and maybe see some improvement. Boys, I'm going to give you two pennies. Anybody two pennies? Sherelle?
I've got like four, so I'm going to go right the fire.
All right, we'll take them all at once.
All right, so first, just a quick recruiting note. With them having a week off, we still are figuring out exactly how Hubert Davis does things, but this is kind of one of those prime weeks for him to be out on the road. Looking at his commits, Zayden High, or signees Zayden High and Simeon Wilcher, as well as his 2024 commit Drake Powell, and then the rest of the 2024 class, and maybe even one of someone like Isaiah Harwell in the 2025 class. I won't say that. So the other thing I wanted to say was that with Carolina basketball, man, you know, it is a marathon. I'm not trying to be positive guy, but a lot can change. And we've seen that very quickly. A lot can change over the course of, 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago, UNC had the number one team. The football team was 9-1 and everything looked great. And that is not the case today. So as quickly as it went south, I think, things can start to turn around. And it feels like this week is kind of one of those, is for the fan base, it's a good time. They can watch women's soccer, maybe win a national championship tomorrow, and then just take a break and just take a step back and reassess. I think recalibration and reassessment is good this time of year. So I would urge everyone to do that over the next week and come back next, Saturday and see what they do.
Go see your family. Your family has missed you. Go check back in with your family. They want to hear from you.
And third penny, last one. 2024 target Jaren Stevenson actually took his first official visit. He was at Georgetown this past weekend. So something to monitor there. He has four left. We think he'll take one to North Carolina, but when we find out, we'll let you know.
Thank you, sir. Much obliged. Sean, your pennies, please.
Well, I was kind of chuckling because the Georgetown game was played against somebody we're all very familiar with, who had one of his better games,
a reunion of sorts.
Yeah. I mean, I think, right now they're not a tournament team. I think that's pretty clear in terms of how they're playing. With the regression that we've been seeing from the majority of the players, and they're not going to go 15-5 in the ACC, in my opinion, this year. So luckily, with the Ohio State and Michigan games coming up, as well as Georgia Tech, there are some opportunities to go into the new year playing better and everybody being a little more positive. I think one of those from Iowa State, really Iowa State and all four teams, I think, were very strong defensively. Virginia Tech's defensive rating does not reflect that, but their style of play, I think all four teams, Iowa State, Indiana, and Virginia Tech, all those teams play physical, which I think is why we've seen UNC get to the free throw line early. They've been very aggressive, with the guards and with everybody, well past the 3-point line, as well as shutting off. And I think that has bothered this UNC team. And I think that type of defense, for the most part, has bothered UNC over the past few years. Alabama was a little different, where they're just super athletic and you're not getting clean looks in the paint. But I think UNC has always struggled with that, slower pace, more physical style of play, which once again, in the tournament last year, it was a little more free flowing athletic teams that they're playing. still strong defensively, but it's a different type of ball game. And I think going forward, Ohio State is like that, but hopefully with a little bit of rest, you have Georgia Tech, Ohio State, Michigan's not that strong defensively, and then you get into the ACC. So hopefully that getting out of that style of play without a reset can help them figure a few things out and start to get the ball rolling so that they do become a tournament team or a bubble team that we're repeating the same thing we did from last year. But, you know, definitely the style of play that they went against the past few weeks was not ones that they have done well against, but at the same time, they need to be the ones that are dictating what the opponent should be doing versus being dictated to.
I appreciate that, guys. And you know what? I got something I'm going to throw in here. I don't know if this is going to become a recurring theme for me, but, and this is not Joey complaining about the officials, but officiating needs to figure out what they're doing about the charge circle under the basket. Because I have seen multiple games this year, not just North Carolina games, where players have been squarely on, or sometimes have a whole foot inside of the charge circle, and the play gets called as a charge instead of a blocking foul. And I don't understand if you're not gonna call that and legislate it properly, what are we even doing? So something to keep your eye on, because I feel like it's happening a lot. Either officials don't know what they're doing about it as a whole, or the rule's just bad and needs to be taken back out of the sport. So that'll be my little soapbox. But guys, I always appreciate what y'all bring to the show. It's so enlightening for me. It's fun for me. It's a great way to wrap up an evening. And I hope that our listeners and subscribers appreciate you as well. You guys are always on it, so I'm thankful for you. Appreciate Johnny T-Shirt for sponsoring. Appreciate John Siegley for producing. But for Sherelle McMillan and Sean Moran, I am just Joey Powell. This has been the Coast to Coast Podcast on InsideCarolina.com. We will talk to you very soon.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I'm a survivor.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.